You're listening to Gillespie, Excellence in Internet Radio, only on FTRradio.com. And welcome to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. I am your host, Josh Gillespie. I am on site in lovely Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. I'm sitting on a lovely patio, sipping on a Yingling, the ocean just a few feet away from me, and with me is Mark.
No one cares.
And with me is Mark Warner.
Yeah. Can you feel it, baby? I can too.
It's that time again. The time where we bring the best from the Midwest and Rhino goodness. He's cute. He's cuddly. He won't take a position to save his life. It's Mark Warner!
We came here at 6 o'clock in the morning, 5:30 to see them, and all they do is push you farther and farther away, and then they don't even let you see them.
Mark, how the heck are you?
Whatever. Anyway, what do you want?
Well, Mark, it seems like you've had a little bit of a bad day.
Not liking Jimmy Buffett.
Tell me why
waking
should...
up and breathing. What do you expect me to be?
Why in the world should I like Jimmy Buffett?
He's an American as apple pie in baseball.
No, Jimmy Buffett. Yes. No, he's not. No, he's not. You do not put Jimmy Buffett in the same line as For America. No.
What do you mean?
No. No, he is associated with his own thing, Margaritaville, which, you know, no, Jimmy Buffett is not apple pie or baseball or bacon. No, he's not in those realms. But
why do you hate America?
Well, why do I hate America?
You don't like Jimmy Buffett.
No, I don't like Jimmy Buffett. But I like bacon. I like apple pie. I love baseball.
Yeah, but this hating Jimmy Buffett stuff, I can't stand it. You remind me of Thomas LeDuc.
How in
Thomas
the world
LeDuc
do I remind you of Thomas?
Anti-American, race-baiting hater. That's what you do.
Race-baiter?
You hate Jimmy Buffett. Yeah, you're a racist.
Hell, whoa! Hey, cool your jets there, real Warner.
That's not me. But it's starting to come out. Now, as far as Duke goes.
Yeah, tell me your...
Can we ever have him on the show again? Ever again?
I don't know, Mark. You see, he owns the station, and he allows us to be on it.
So...
I mean, I don't disagree with what you're saying, but, you know... He does own the station, and if we no longer have him on the show, at least occasionally, because he does provide a sense of comic relief, in the way that Gallagher provides comic relief.
His face provides comic relief. That's about the only thing that provides comic relief.
His what?
His face.
His face. I want everybody to know that if they hear that in the background, that is not. This is not the mean streets of Detroit. These are fireworks going off, my friend, because we're on the beach and people can set off fireworks down here whatever the hell they want.
Yeah, because it's a body of water.
Maybe it is. I can't see them right now because they're on the other side of the villa. That's right. I'm in a villa.
Such a wonder center.
It's nice to live the life of a one percenter for at least a week.
It's like one of my buddies said on the golf course on Friday. He goes, "You live." And he goes, "I always have this saying." He goes, "You make money of the 99% and live like the 1%." It's perfect.
It is. If you do it the right way, you can be a 99%er.
Right.
But. You can live like the 1%.
Right.
For about a week.
Right. Maybe a couple of days sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? I am so dedicated to this show that even on my vacation, in my living life like the 1%, I am still dedicated to doing this show.
And we're proud of you for doing that.
Well, thank you, sir.
I'm sure Thomas LeDuc will appreciate that.
Well, he should at least appreciate.
Doesn't appreciate anything else.
But. No, he doesn't. He doesn't.
He should start appreciating his mirror instead of looking at it all the time. Breaking that thing. I can't stand that guy. I don't know why Fingers continues to allow him to have presence.
Well, again, you know, he has... Well, he and Fingers are related. He's got that whole cousin thing
going
on. And
I'm sorry for Fingers for that. I really am. Has anybody even asked Fingers how he feels about being related to Thomas LeDuc?
Probably not recently. No.
Think Fingers on this one. Think of it. You're related to Thomas LeDuc. That would suck.
Now, Mark, are you petitioning to replace Thomas LeDuc on the Snark Factor? Is that what you're doing right here?
No, I don't want to be on the Snark Factor. I just don't understand why Fingers keep letting him on.
I wouldn't be upset if you do. I mean, I'm more than happy to. I mean, you've done appearances on the Right Hook with John Brodigan. You can do these things.
Yeah, I don't want to be on the Snark Factor.
All right. You're a known commodity here.
He would be better served having a different girl on every week just to talk to instead of Thomas LeDuc.
He does have a different girl on. He has a different girl
on
every night.
I know, just have that person on there. Thomas LeDuc brings nothing to the conversation. Nothing.
Oh, well, you know...
Your throat helps nothing.
Well, you know who does bring... Well, you know, we'll get to that here in a second. But
you know who does bring stuff to the conversation?
Who?
Our newest member of the Gillespie.
That's what I was just about to talk about. You know, we're going to be going live in a few
weeks.
Nobody
else has done it.
We're going to be going live in a few weeks. Something that I know that you and I are very proud of. Something that I know FTR, despite what maybe Thomas LeDuc may think, is also proud of. And once we go live, we're going to be introducing one of the newest members of the Gillespie family, and that is one Smoozy Q, Susie Harold.
I'm so excited about that. You don't even know.
I am too. And Susie's going to be at Smart Girl Summit, and hopefully Susie is going to be in position to get a few interviews, work the FTR table, and I know that they will be able to get those interviews to us. We'll be able to run them here on Gillespie, and essentially we'll kind of ease her in to the live show with a couple of our pre-recorded shows before we go live. But, people are familiar with the Smoozy Q, not only on the Twitters, but also she is a regular attender and participant in this Snark Factor chat.
Right.
So, yeah, very excited to have Smoozy Q joining the Gillespie household here on the show. And she's a lawyer.
Yes.
So she could talk. She's smart.
Right.
You know, we got our own smart girl to a certain degree. You know, yeah, well, we got our own smart girl.
Got our own smart girl.
But, coming up, I do want to bring this up. Talking about other people who can bring the conversation. That is candidate for Congress in Massachusetts. You know him because he ran against Barney Frank last time. We're bringing on Sean Bealot. He is running against, get this, a Kennedy. Seriously, how many are there of these people?
Oh, they just keep going and going. They're like the Energizer Bunnies. The Kennedy name is like the Energizer Bunny. They just keep going and going.
Yep. So we have Sean Bealot coming up next. And after that... We are doing this. We are bringing Thomas LeDuc onto the show.
Oh.
We're going to try.
Why?
I'm using air quotes here. We're going to try to reconcile with the guy who tried to steal a member from us.
I ain't hugging it out with him.
We're going to try to hug it out, Mark. We're going to try to hug it out.
It's not happening.
Well, I want everyone to stick around because we have a great show coming up. Like I said, coming up next, Sean Bealot from Massachusetts. And then Thomas LeDuc. It's a cage match here on Gillespie, but that's the way we like it. Stick around. We got more coming up next. You're listening to Gillespie on FTRradio.com. Something moving, feeling new. It is real quiet, muddy water.
FTR Radio is from the right radio. Online at FTRradio.com.
Epic the song to shed me some light.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. I am pleased to have our next guest. He first challenged Barney Frank last year and came pretty close, people. And I am pleased to have him on the show this week. It is Sean Bealot. He is running in the 4th Congressional District in Massachusetts. Sean, you must have scared Barney Frank enough that he just said, you know what, I give up, I'm quitting, I'm not going to try this again.
Well, I don't think he enjoyed working for his job. he hadn't had to since 1982, and I don't think he'd like the experience. And we got redistricted in Massachusetts, and our new district is much more competitive. And I would have loved to have run against him in this district, but he apparently didn't think it would be a good time and opted out.
Well,
so now we have an open seat, and I'm running against Joe Kennedy III.
Goodness, you know, no offense to the Kennedy clan, but how many of them are there?
I don't know. Anytime you have to number above two, you know you got too many.
Well, the one thing that I really liked about your candidacy the first time, one, obviously it was something that, you know, from the modern political observer or any traditional political observer probably would not have expected you to have the outcome that you did. You really put a scare into Barney Frank. And like you said, he actually had to run for his seat for the first time since 1982. And it seems as if slowly, very slowly but surely, there is a shift towards common sense conservatism in Massachusetts. Am I reading that correctly?
No, I think you're absolutely right. Massachusetts, 52% of the voters in my district are unenrolled. That means in Massachusetts, that's what they call independent. And they could definitely be Democrats for the past several decades. That's what they've had to vote for. They haven't had good Republican candidates. But they still are choosing the title independent, and that's because they want a choice. They want to have two strong candidates on the ballot, and they want to make a decision. And when they have that choice, more and more and more of them are coming our direction. You saw it in the Scott Brown race, where they were essentially voting against health care, and this time you're going to see it again. My prediction is he's going to win by several points against Elizabeth Warren. You've seen it in a lot of the state legislative races. Out of the 160 state House members in Massachusetts, 33 are Democrats. Well, prior to the last election, there were only 16. So 33 isn't a huge number, but it's a doubling of our presence in the state house. So, mm-hmm. You know, we're seeing these signs here and there. It's slow, but sure. You know, this is just like there was the Arab Spring. I think maybe this is the Massachusetts Republican Spring. but I think we're headed in the right direction.
Well, the one thing that seems to separate you, especially from Joe Kennedy, is that you have a wealth of private sector experience. And again, more and more these days, it seems as if voters are looking for someone who is more like them, you know, not someone who is a lifetime political hack or crony or someone who has, again, no offense to Mr. Kennedy, I've never personally met him, but someone who doesn't have a family name. They want that fresh face.
Well, you know, most people, if you ask them whether they'd rather have a career politician or a citizen legislator, it's a no-brainer. Now, if somebody can look me straight in the eye and not smile and tell me that Joe Kennedy III is going to be a citizen legislator, that he's only going to go down there for a little while, I don't know, but I'll be impressed. the average Kennedy, once they reach federal office, spends 18 years in Washington.
Wow.
So, right.
And so that spans all state Kennedys. I mean, on the East Coast, because they've had them in Maryland, they had them in Rhode Island, they're everywhere.
That's right. So the Kennedys represent, you know, and I have nothing against this guy either. I don't have anything against the family in particular. What I do have something against is this notion that we should have political royalty in this country. And the Kennedys represent, and the reason is, so Joe Kennedy III, he's 30 years old. He has 2 years of work experience as an assistant DA where he tried three cases, and he served 2 years in the Peace Corps. So he's another lawyer. He hasn't worked in the private sector. And what he's bringing is the Kennedy legacy. And you ask Democrats in this state, and they will say publicly, well, I'm voting for him not because I know his policies, but because I know he'll vote like his family did. So I say, look, if you're happy with where we're at right now, if you're happy with what's been happening in Washington, if you're happy with the way this state has been going on the past several decades, absolutely vote for this guy again. Mm-hmm. Most people don't feel that way. Most people, like you said, want regular people. They want people who have worked in business, because if the number one issue facing us this year is jobs in the economy, then don't you want people who have actually spent time in the economy? Mm-hmm. And I think when we poll and we take the names out and we take the parties out and we just say bio, I end up coming out like 2-1 ahead of Kennedy, because people want something different. Mm-hmm. And that's this year. That's what we're gonna give them.
Well, you certainly do provide a difference in what I think people are used to in Massachusetts. You know, for a long time, it has been a liberal bastion. Correct me if I'm wrong, but do they have a Republican member to Congress at all?
16 years ago, they did.
Okay, that's what I was gonna say. So you're looking at when you look at it, you know, just from kind of a from a sky view, it is a very blue state. But you know, there has been, as you've mentioned, a slow, and as we've talked about, just kind of a movement towards common sense conservatism in the state. And you talk about a citizen legislature. And, you know, I feel like, you know, in a state where that has so much constitutional history, that idea of a citizen legislature is lost on them. And it's lost on a lot of America, but it seems to be especially lost on those in Massachusetts. So when you talk about being a citizen legislator, how do you approach that with your average constituent?
Well, it's exactly like that. I tell people all the time, Massachusetts, parts of it are very liberal, but the state as a whole is not that liberal. It's very democratic. It's been represented by Democrats for a long time. It's not that liberal. And so, again, once you introduce people to a new set of ideas and choice, and you start seeing people move our direction, you know, the average sort of middle-income, blue-collar male in this country is starting to vote Republican pretty consistently. You look at labor union members, and the members, the rank and file, they like me. The leadership can't stand me. You know, you go to a Tea Party meeting and you'll see a quarter of the people there are union members, at least here in Massachusetts.
Wow.
And so you're seeing, you know, departures from the typical norms. And a lot of what we've had, the machine politics in Massachusetts, are a residue of a century ago, when the Irish immigrants were coming and the Italian immigrants, and they got these, you know, ward bosses, and they set up and they organized well. And that's, like I said, it's just a relic. And so as the Republican Party starts organizing more, that's crumbling. They're losing a lot of leverage and ability to push on these things, and the state's becoming increasingly competitive.
Well, one, I mean, from my point of view, and that is fantastic news, and I feel like that's obviously that bodes well for you in November, but I know you're not taking this lying down at all. Tell me, what has it been like in the ground there, and how do you differentiate this campaign between the one that you ran in 2010?
Well, you know, in many respects, Barney was a tougher opponent. He was a 30-year incumbent. One of the things he did really well, I grudgingly admit, is constituent service. He did a great job at taking care of constituents. He'd been doing that for 30 years. He had a very gerrymandered district. He outspent me by $2 million. He had almost universal name ID. So he was in many respects tougher than Joe Kennedy, who has a name that people recognize, and more money than I do. But once you start comparing the life story, I'm a Marine. I spent 4 years on active duty. I've been in the reserve for 10 years. I have a master in public policy from Harvard and an MBA from Wharton, and spent the past 10 years or so growing companies and helping create profitable new technologies, robots that are literally saving lives in Iraq and Afghanistan, going after roadside bombs. And so I've had the opportunity to get my hands dirty in a bunch of different areas, you know, from the military and technology and sort of large corporations and a bunch of these other things. And people can identify with that because it's much more similar to what they've been doing than is somebody who spent 2 years as an assistant DA. Mm-hmm. People, I think, are getting to the point where they don't want professional politicians. They want, you know, people who are going to go down there and be citizen legislators and do some good. So what's different then about this time and last time is some of the advantages that were coming with the incumbency for Barney. Kennedy's almost an incumbent, except he doesn't have those advantages. Mm-hmm. So his name comes with the sense of incumbency and a close relationship to insider politics and all that stuff. But he can't deliver the goods. He can't do constituent service. Mm-hmm. He moved into the district a week before he got into the race. He hasn't been living here for 30 years.
I'm sorry. In Indiana, where I'm from, residency has just been such a major issue this year that I laugh when people just decide, oh, I'm going to move here and run. It's the height of egomania to think that you can just waltz into a district and say, you know what? I got a name that people recognize. I'm sure they will accept me as one of their own. And that galls me. I'm sorry. I'm going off on a tangent. This is not Sean Bealot.
You're right on. To further that point, you know, he's waltzing and he's saying I can run in this district, and he's also saying I don't have to run on issues. Mm-hmm. So for the first 3 or 4 months he was in the race until, you know, we made fun of him enough that he had to change it. He didn't have any issues listed on his website. Mm-hmm. I talked to all sorts of reporters to say, oh yeah, he won't take an interview with me, he won't call me back, he won't get on camera, this and that. So he's not doing anything that a candidate would typically do to win voters and get his name out. All he's doing is relying on his name and a bunch of money. And I find it disgusting. Again, I don't have anything against this guy personally. It's more just politics in America shouldn't work that way.
Yeah, they feel like they deserve it. I mean,
right.
that's the kind of attitude. You're right. It is absolutely disgusting. Sorry, just kind of went off on a little bit of a tangent there. But, you know, one thing that I do want to ask you, and I'm sure you're probably getting this. I don't know if you're getting it so much from people in Massachusetts, but I know it's interesting to me. You are running in Massachusetts. Our presidential nominee is from Massachusetts. The president claims that he has built his healthcare tax. He has modeled it after Romney Care. Now, is that an issue coming up in your race as you guys, you know, you have the quote-unquote model going on right now in Massachusetts? I mean, does that play out in your race at all? Is that something that comes up with constituents?
No, people here are just as mad as anyone else about Obamacare. They see it just as much as an imposition and a set of taxes and something that's going to lessen the quality of care and increase the span of government as they do in the rest of the country. Mitt Romney is right when he says that, you know, the solution in Massachusetts was fine for Massachusetts and it wouldn't work anywhere else. 84% of people, when surveyed recently in Massachusetts, like the healthcare system. Mm-hmm. So something's going right here, you know.
Mm-hmm. You're saying that Romney could actually take, you know, a model that he has done in Massachusetts, and could he make it larger, or is it just for Massachusetts?
No, just for Massachusetts. It's not going to work for Texas or Louisiana or North. You know, and he says that, and mm-hmm. I agree 100%. It works here. I don't even think it would work in Rhode Island. You know, every state's different. And I think it's the sort of thing that should be decided at the state level until the federal government does the one thing that it should in this realm, which is allow and enable interstate competition. Mm-hmm. But until we get away from the 50 state fiefdoms we have, I think it should be decided at the state level. And so there's no baggage associated with with Romney Care here in Massachusetts. The other thing that I think out-of-state people may lose track of is, like I said, there's 160 members of the State House, and we now have 33 Republicans. I think when he was in office, there were a dozen. We have four senators out of 40. So what people kind of lose track of is the fact that he had absolutely no allies in the State House. And so a lot of the things that even he doesn't like were as a result of the fact that, you know, a governor just doesn't control the legislative process. You know, he has a sway, he can introduce stuff, et cetera, but at the end of the day, you have to have a legislature that's going to agree with and support those policies. So, you know, the big takeaway for me would be for people from out of state who look and say, well, Romney Care is like Obamacare, therefore I don't like Mitt Romney, I would just say no one is arguing that it should be done outside of Massachusetts. The president is using that to try to undermine inter-party support for Romney. But I don't think it's a relevant issue.
Now, obviously the big issue this year is jobs. I mean, healthcare has kind of taken over the last couple of weeks, but overall people are concerned about the jobs in the economy. How would you as Congressman Bilott address this issue?
Well, you know, I think there's really two primary things to do. The first is stimulus, but by giving people back their money. So I think it's good to put money back in the economy, but let's do it in the way that's most effective, which is to allow individuals and businesses to make decisions that are going to be best for their growth, and that growth will grow the economy. I think that's pretty straightforward. The second one is create a predictable regulatory environment. So right now with this Tax-mageddon stuff that might be coming or might not, or might be this percentage or might be that, how can you plan for that? With Obamacare, how can you, you know, when the Supreme Court ruling came out, I saw on CNN that morning, two-thirds of small business owners surveyed had no idea what was in the bill. How can you plan when you don't know what's coming for healthcare? You don't know what's coming for taxes. You can't. So I've talked to a lot of small business owners who are sitting on capital, essentially. They're sitting on cash, and they say, you know, I could hire somebody right now, but I'm not because I don't know what's coming.
Wow.
And if we don't have that predictability, we're just not going to grow the jobs we need to. So I think those are two big things we could do relatively quickly that would get us back on our feet.
And real quick, as we're coming to the end here, with your military background, how do you see America's foreign policy playing out? I mean, there seem to be some mixed reviews on Obama's foreign policy. Some people say that he is continuing the Bush foreign policy, but then we see the way that he interacts with some of our allies in the Middle East, and we just, you know, we scratch our heads saying, what the heck is going on?
Yeah, I have nothing good to say about the president's foreign policy whatsoever. You know, the drone stuff, I like some of the outcomes. We should not know about the outcomes. So one of the things I have done in the reserves is I'm an intelligence officer. I've been around the intelligence community. There is a reason that stuff isn't disclosed, discussed, et cetera. You know, you don't play fast and loose with classified information in order to get yourself reelected. That disgusts me. He has no clear vision for what we're trying to accomplish in Afghanistan. Essentially, during the 2008 campaign, he was against Iraq, and so he wanted to still look tough. So he said, Afghanistan's the right place to be. He had this surge, which he had no purpose for, no goals for. And so, you know, we're spending billions in Afghanistan without a clear plan for what it is we're trying to accomplish. Libya was, there was absolutely no reason for us to be, you know, basically without European oil.
Yeah, absolutely.
What were we doing there?
I'm sorry to cut you off, but you're absolutely right. There is no constitutional reason why we should have been in Libya.
None.
And meanwhile, None. We let Syria, I mean, if we're going to be using examples here, we go into Libya, but we let Syria burn.
Right.
What's going on?
Well, and we don't do anything to support Israel. Israel's our closest and best ally when it comes to Iran, which is a regional and real threat. I mean, it's a known state sponsor of terror. They were sending people in to train IED makers in Afghanistan or in Iraq to kill American troops. They've been responsible for bombings. They're bad actor. And so here we have a soft policy over most of the past several years towards Iran, and we have one ally in the region who has the military capability and willingness to use the capability to stand up to Iran. And we're just sort of pussyfooting around, sometimes acting like we support Israel, but not having a close relationship. You know, it's that sort of stuff. There's no cohesiveness to the foreign policy. It's catch as catch can. It's whatever, you know, the sparkly object is today. And a lot of this comes from, A, we have a president who has no foreign policy experience. B, we have a president, a vice president, a secretary of state, secretary of defense, none of whom have military service. And you see the results of it. Mm-hmm. Joe Biden spent 30 years on foreign affairs. I respect his knowledge, but he doesn't have any direct experience. Mm-hmm. He got elected to the Senate when he was 29 years old. Hillary Clinton sure as heck doesn't. Leon Panetta has had an illustrious career, but, you know, I think it's dangerous when you have top administration officials who lack military experience, and then you have a Congress who isn't willing to stand up to them. You know, why did the Congress let Libya go as far as it did? You know, even when the White House refused to come back and request permission, essentially, they just sort of waved their hands and said, oh, well,
yeah,
you know, it's a real disappointment.
Yeah. Well, Sean, I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to be on the show tonight. For people who want to get involved in your campaign or donate to your campaign, find out more about you, where can they do that?
SeanForCongress.com. SeanForCongress.com.
Are you on Twitter?
Sure am. At Sean Bilett. Bilett's a little harder to spell, but I'm sure if you Google Sean and Barney, it'll come up.
And don't forget, people, if there's one thing that we can all remember from the 2010 campaign between Sean and Barney, it was the Barney Shuffle. That thing was awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, Sean Bilott, he is running for Congress in the 4th District in Massachusetts. Sean, thanks for being on tonight.
Thanks a lot for having me.
You're welcome. You're listening to Gillespie. We'll be right back after these messages.
Meet me when I say you'll be lost to know. Liar schemes and sword machines will hang me from my rope. I'm tired of running from what I was into it.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. Here I am, sitting on my patio, drinking my Yingling with the Atlantic Ocean in the background. And here I am talking to these two douchebags, Mark Warner and Thomas LeDuc. How you guys doing?
It's wow. Hurtful.
I mean, douchebags?
It's, yeah, it's kind
no,
of...
No, I'm sorry, Mark. I shouldn't have lumped you in with that. I should.
God, Josh.
That was my bad. My bad. It's habit. Habit. I mean, you know, Thomas LeDuc is on here with us. Last time we had you had him on, it was the Mark Warner Bitch Fest. So, it old habits die hard, Mark. I apologize. Duke, we'd love to talk to you about Mitt Romney and him supposedly working for Bain, but not working for Bain, according to the Democrats. But you see, Mark. Mark and I wanted to have you on,
right?
Because we need to hug it out.
Need to hug it out.
We need to hug it out, bitch.
We need to hug it out, bitch.
Because
you know, I could be getting my nose hairs braided right now. So let's make sure this is good.
Oh, make sure it's good.
It's Jamaican style, the way Mark likes it. So go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt while you're sitting in your one percenter area in Myrtle Beach, looking down upon all the little people. But go ahead, Mr. Gillespie.
Actually, the little people have pretty much cleared out because it's in the evening. There aren't very many people out here in the area. If I had a webcam, I'd pan it and show you that there are a few people in the pool. We're close to evening right now. Actually, we're very near 9 o'clock, so everything seems kind of clear.
If you had any balls, you would yell shark.
Well, Mr. LeDuc, last week, our shows aired, our respective mm-hmm. shows. Mm-hmm. Well, yours didn't because
right. Yeah.
You made a big deal about it airing, and then you didn't do it. You did nothing. You talked a big game about taking Mark and I to task for calling you out for trying to steal some of our people.
Right.
And then
if he wants her, he can have her.
And then like a pansy, you just kind of laid down and took it.
Well, I mean, you can make that argument. Much like Harry Reid can make the argument that they've passed a budget in the Senate, but of course,
no. See, Harry Reid has less balls than you. We know that. Here's the thing: is that on last Wednesday night's Snark Factor,
yeah,
you were a little bit PO'd. A little bit PO'd that Mark Warner and I. Mark Warner and I called you out, and you said if I could pull the audio from last week's Snark Factor, I would pull it right now, and you would say that on my show Duke Over America on Friday,
live
on Friday at 11 a.m. I'm gonna take it to these two douchebags. And,
that's right. Yeah.
And
Well, I said I was going to comment on the baseless accusations that you guys, the hurtful things you said about me.
Mark, were they baseless?
No, they weren't baseless. But honestly,
of course, let me just be honest.
Let me be honest for a minute.
Yeah. Let Mark.
That'd be a first. But go ahead,
Duke. Fuck it. I don't care anymore. If you want her, take her. I'm done with it. I'm not going to fight it.
You know,
I'm not going to fight it, Duke.
Because
fighting you is like, hell, I don't know. You're not worth it, man. You're just not worth it.
No.
You know, here's the thing, Duke. Here's the thing. Yeah. I'm with Mark on this because we've already replaced her.
We've replaced her. So you can have her.
She's already been replaced because she's shown her true colors. Not that we don't have anything against Hannah. We still like her, and we'll still invite her
speak
on the show.
Speak for yourself, Gillespie.
Well, no, I do. I can't speak for you, Mark. I still like her, but here's the thing. We're going to be going live, hopefully, near the end of the month.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we're bringing in some new blood.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the Smoozy Q is going to be joining the Gillespie cast.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, we believe we're upgrading. So you can have Hannah.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Take
now,
her.
Let me go through a couple things here.
Hold on. I need to sip my Yingling real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, hold on. I don't know if you can hear that.
I know you're good with the phallic symbols. So I did mean to do a response, and in fact, I was going to cut up that 10 minutes of brilliant radio where the two of you went back and forth picking on a helpless female.
No. Mark,
helpless?
Hold on. I sat back while you gurgled. Let me talk.
Fuck you. Helpless?
So I just I sat there and
bullshit.
Said, my Lord, what is up with this? So then, of course, Josh, I think we've talked about this. I haven't had the pleasure of talking to Mark and or the whore, but I'm putting together a Michigan GOP Senate debate with the four people running up here.
Hey, you guys have a chance at winning that at all? No, don't get me wrong. I'm a big fan of Pete Hoekstra. But,
okay. Yeah, just talked to him today. He's one last piece of the puzzle. We could get into that. I mean, there's... Being that Romney is from the home state, what happened, you might remember in 2008 when McCain pulled out early and then actually a lot of people...
That's what she said.
Right. Well, no, we wish it would have happened that way so we would have been spared Megan. basically, a lot of our Michigan people went down to Indiana because you guys were in trouble down there. And hopefully, that being that Romney was born here, his dad was a governor here in the late 60s, they keep Michigan in play. And if they do that, the Michigan GOP feels confident that they can knock off Stabenow.
So what's your point in all this rambling you're doing?
He asked me a question, Mark. I know it's hard for you to follow along. We'll go slower like they do
Get
on Twitter with your five
point.
Followers.
I don't want to hear your life story.
So anyway,
I want to hear it, Duke.
So anyway, so I was doing that, and I basically I listened to this show.
Yeah.
That you guys
and we thank you. We thank you for listening.
I listened to it, and I was horrified. I thought I was listening to a bunch of leftists who had just got done watching Silence of the Lambs.
They're picking on me.
No, not picking on me. Picking on a female like you did.
Shut up, dude.
Horrid.
Hold on.
She can dish it out as much as she can take it. Quit defending.
It was Mark's idea.
I know. Well, of course, everything evil in the world begins with Warner. So now you guys are talking about a human being, an individual, somebody who actually is a sentient human life form, unlike Mark Warner. And you're talking about selling her off like a car, like you own a title.
Isn't selling her off down in Indiana? No.
What is it with you people?
What we breed down here in Indiana, Duke, which is what you people in Michigan might not be familiar with since you elected a Canadian.
Right.
The
beer's better.
Is loyalty. That's all. That's all we ask for is a little bit of loyalty.
You know what? Her running off to you and throwing her arms around you like you're some whatever you are.
He's the ED. He's the ED.
Erectile dysfunctional leader. I get it. Okay. And so, no, she sold herself out, so we're done with her.
I'm not gonna throw
Hannah under the bus like Warner is.
Because that's fine.
Just get it.
But
you know what?
Let me state something here. Yeah.
I have been very, I think, fair to anybody and everybody who's contributed to FTR Radio. And I try to promote everybody. Josh, I even try to promote your show with this lug nut moron that you have on here, Mr. Mark Warner, who we just all love and adore anyway. And, you know, maybe one day we'll ask Santa for a personality form. So... When somebody from the Gillespie team hits me up and says, hey, I might be able to get some interviews with some people at Romney headquarters here. And she mentioned, I think it was Sharon Day or something.
Sharon Day. My goodness, okay. Thomas LeDoux. Right. She's the vice chairman of the Republican National Committee.
But I'm not a Republican, so I know the players, peripheral. No.
You don't know the players, obviously.
Yeah, I do. Because I don't need to know the players, because I will rip the Republican Party when it needs to be, and also the Democrats. See, I don't have to worry about, they're screwing this up like they did 2008, but I'm friends with that person. No, I know who the people are, and that's why I had fun taking pot shots at Michael Steele, because he sucked. Thank you. So she comes to me with this, and I said, sure, we'll air that. I didn't know if it was going to be on your show, if it would have been on Finger's show, if it would have been on John Brodigan's show. I don't care, because I want quality content on FTR Radio. That is my goal, my mission.
You know, hold on. It's hard to argue with that, Mark.
Wait a minute. He said quality.
I just pulled it out of my ass.
On his show.
Hmm?
Hey, no, Duke has different standards for his show. But,
that's right.
But when we're talking about FTR writ large.
Yeah.
Well.
I want the
that sun has gotten to your head. Get inside.
I want the best for FTR, and that is why I promote people.
You know what?
Oh no!
I have something to say then.
Go ahead.
Oh jeez, what?
Go ahead.
Hey, you guys, I'm getting him.
You know what?
He almost sounded like Cartman right there.
Later this week, Josh Gillespie, because you're down tanning, you're not gonna be there.
No.
But of course, is the Smart Girl Summit.
I think I'm gonna skip it.
Oh, I know I know you would love to skip it, but unfortunately for you, you're gonna be tortured by three or four women with feathers, and we're going to raise money for charity. And do you know what charity is going to be?
Breast cancer?
Nope. For Warner to get a facelift to look like John Brodigan.
Oh gosh, how much of an upgrade actually is that,
dude? Hey, what did I ever do to you?
Who was number 19 with a bullet?
I'm Okay.
What did I do to you, man? What did I do to you?
Yeah, Brodigan gave me $5 to say that. Yep, had you given me 10, I would have gone the other way. But no, Warner, you're a cheap bastard.
This is quality radio tonight.
Okay.
You're such a cheap whore. $5?
Hey, do a favor, okay? And if you're saying you need a raise down there, just mug the mayor like we did up here, and then, you know, you'll be able to pay $10-$15 more, and, you know, we'll rip on Brodigan. How about that? I'm a capital.
Hold on. I think Warner would love to mug Bloomberg. Frankly, I think half of America would love to mug Bloomberg right about now.
Don't bring Bloomberg into this.
Okay. Did you hold on, Mark? Did you hear Duke's epic rant against the epic rant against Bloomberg? And somehow it went into seatbelts. But
That was Fingers. That was Fingers.
That was an epic rant. I've never heard Fingers rant like that before.
Yeah, he gets ticky about the little stuff.
Well,
you know, because if he can't get a 64-ounce, big gulp when he's in New York, driving through because he's going to meet with Jedediah Bela and Monica Crowley, he can't get that 64-ounce Mountain Dew, somebody's going to pay.
Well, why can't he just walk into a store and say, hey, I'm number 5?
But you're talking about a city of the population of Indiana, probably.
Actually, I believe New York City has a larger population than the state of Indiana.
Okay.
Not by much, but it does.
But so you're basically, how many people are actually going to go, oh, this freak just walked in and there's Malloy? You got freaks looking like that all the time walking in joints.
Actually, yeah, he'd just be run-of-the-mill up there, wouldn't he?
He would be. He absolutely would be.
Are you calling Fingers Malloy a freak?
Yeah. I'll call him a freak on the show tonight, okay?
Actually, yeah, that kind of... Yeah, he is.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
But he's our freak.
He is our freak, that's right. And he occasionally gets upset about little things, and I wholeheartedly agreed with him. What happened to the city of New York? What happened to the state of Indiana that they used to breed tough people?
Yeah, we used to be able to smoke in public places.
And now? Now you got Josh Gillespie, respected political analyst.
Thank you.
And Mark Warner, servant of the people of the city of Indianapolis, a fine city, may I add, and you two are picking out a 21-year-old lass.
You know what? I don't feel a damn bit sorry for her.
Well, you know, I've since made up with the dear Hannah. But the thing is that, you know, Mark may feel a little disinterested here, but I'm still willing to hug it out, bitch. Mark?
Nope, I'm not hugging it out.
Oh, come on!
I'm not there yet. Plus, I don't want to get all kinds of diseases by hugging Duke. I don't know why
you have to include me. I haven't even talked to Hannah since last week when all of this broke and Warner basically threatened to kill people. So I just basically said there's something in the water down in Indiana and it ain't right.
Well, the
yeah, you people down in Indiana, okay? That Bobby Knight syndrome, something happened. You people snapped 15 years ago. Ain't been right since.
Hey, give me a chair and I'll toss it across the court.
Exactly.
I'll do it.
I mean,
yeah.
I'll do it.
What's the problem?
It has to be one of those little tyke chairs.
You piss me off and I'll throw that chair right at you.
Yeah.
You know, on Friday I went golfing and I had a really good game. You want to know why? I taped your face to those golf balls. I had the best game of my life.
Oh, I thought you were going to say because you pretended you were President Obama.
Oh.
Well, a public employee and out on the golf course on a Friday.
Hold on. If Mark
had
a good
day off, Duke.
Yeah.
In honor of the president.
Right.
If Mark had a good game on Friday, it wasn't because of him.
Never is. I mean, you know.
Dude, to those balls, man. Boof.
Flying. You know, that's hurtful. That's hurtful, Mr. Warner.
Oh, you need maybe? A tissue to wipe your tears? Cry,
baby. I tell you what. You know what? Okay?
Dude, today is not the day to fuck with me, so just go ahead and suck it up, get a tissue, wipe your tears, call Melanie when we're done, let her hug you and you know, console you, and then, you know, grow a pair and then pull your balls out of her purse.
You know what, Mr. LaDuke? I'm just going to give you a heads up, as you are the ED of FTR Radio.
Sorry, it's just so funny. It's so funny when Werner talks about pulling someone's balls out of the purse when we all know that Sherry Daniels has had his for the past 3 years, and she's been playing poison in the backyard with the kids.
Yeah, she hasn't even given him back yet because his term ain't over yet.
I know, and she keeps going, these marbles are so small.
Well, I'm just going to give you a heads up that tomorrow I'm heading up to Charleston. Gonna catch a single-A Yankees game. Gonna catch old good old Dante Bichette Jr. in action.
Okay.
It is the, I forget the name of the baseball team. It's in Charleston. But it's owned by one Bill Murray.
Oh, is that right? A single-A team. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It's also owned by Mike Vec. Co-ownership there. Anyway.
Mike Vec is, who's Mike Vec again?
He is the son of Bill Vec, who you may remember from the famous... Disco Night. At Comiskey Park. Yeah, back in what, 79?
That's right. Yeah, they're when the Tigers at night.
Yep.
That's right. Yep.
Well, his son Mike owns this Charleston team. So I'm going to be doing that. I'm going to be in Charleston all day tomorrow. So I'm really not going to be doing too much editing on this show. So all the swearing that Mark did, I'm pretty much going to leave that.
That's fine, because what it's going to show is that Mark Warner is a small-minded prick, and that basically he has no regard for women, small children. He has no regard.
Duke.
Yeah.
I didn't see the permission slip from Melanie for you to be on the show tonight. Did she clear this?
Oh, you know what? Being that I am the ED, I'm allowed to do anything I want at any time, but I do, Cupcake, and appreciate you asking.
I just want to make sure.
Now, let's hope.
You took your balls out of her purse for a few minutes so you could come on the show and play with the boys. But, you know,
let's hope there, Honey Pie, that heat doesn't get to you, that icing on your cupcake starts to melt. Because if one thing we don't want is a mushy Mark Warner.
No.
A mushy Mark Warner? That doesn't do anybody any good. In fact, it probably scares small children and animals and bears away.
And bears? Well, we're going to have to come to
a real close. Quick, Mark, I would suggest for you, go back to the golf range, get a bucket of balls, pretend that they're yours, and don't hit them, just fondle them.
You know that little thing there on the course where you can wash your balls?
Oh yeah.
That's where Mark's going to be spending most of his time.
Mark used to just sit there as a kid and go, I can't wait till one day I grow up and could do that. And Jerry Daniels screwed that up.
Well, on that note, I think we've come to a close on this wonderful program. Thomas LaDuke, can you tell us where people can find you on the internets?
Well, LaDukeFTRRadio.com, of course. Maybe you've noticed the FTR Radio Twitter account, at FTR_radio. Been battling a lot with the Paul Bots lately. I always encourage people to jump in because that's so much fun.
Oh, you love the Paul Bots, too.
Oh, yeah. In fact, of course, this is airing Tuesday.
Yes.
On Monday Night Snark Factor. I open up with my response to the Paul Bot, who basically said that the Snark Factor chat room is filled with a bunch of rednecks, hillbillies, and ingrates.
Oh, is that U.S. Libertine?
Yes.
Oh. That goes along
perfectly with his opening monologue of his show the other day. And of course, I don't want to give too much oxygen to the guy, but he said that Sarah Palin was not a pick of John McCain in 2008. She was a pick of the New World Order, which normally I would laugh at that stuff, but of course...
What?
Yeah, no, you go listen to the show. I wouldn't get you, Mr. Gillespie. But you go you go and listen to that, and then you listen, and you go, my God, that sounds like something Mark Warner actually believes.
Hey, Mark. Mark.
Where
can they find you on the internet? At Real M Warner 0003?
No, that is not me, Josh.
Hey!
You can find me at M Warner 95.
Hey, did you guys see that Real Mark Warner's intern join the internet? Or join Twitter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice looking. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. She's a looker, all right. She's definitely
nice,
a looker.
Nice looking. Well, I mean, you figure for somebody that has a jet, you know, has interns and has people at his beck and call, that the intern would have to be A1.
Oh, yeah, definitely,
mm-hmm,
definitely.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, you can find me at Josh Gillespie on Twitter and joshgillespie.com on the regular site. And, well, here every Tuesday night on ftrradio.com. You've been listening to Gillespie. I want to thank my guests, Sean Bilott and Thomas LeDuc. Thanks for hugging it out, bitch.
That's right, whore.
You've been listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. Stay tuned for the Snark Factor with one Thomas LeDuc and the rest of the Snark Factor players. Catch you next week. Good night.
Don't speak like you used to. Where do we go to now that our comfort is gone? Pick up the receiver.
It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are?